Welcome to Profiles in Leadership's video series. We're here to get pearls of wisdom for those who lead. Today we are here at the Combined Sections meeting of APTA in San Antonio, Texas, in the VGM Advantage booth that is a members solutions organization to help physical therapists. Today I have a very distinguished guest to interview, John Wallace. John has 35 years of experience in private practice orthopedics, as well as acute hospitals, acute rehab, home health care, skilled nursing facilities, subacute care, and outpatient orthopedic and sports medicine. He currently serves as president and CEO of BMS Practice Solutions, a PT-based revenue cycle management and software company. He is a nationally invited speaker on payment policy, compliance, and practice management, to just name a few. John has been an APTA board of directors, a trustee for the Foundation for Physical Therapy, and the finance officer for the California PTA. So we're here to talk, John. Thanks for being here. Appreciate you taking time.
Steve, it's nice to join you today.
So what was your first position coming out of PT school? Just fill us, I know that was a few years ago, but.
Sure. My very first position was as a staff therapist at a community hospital in San Gabriel, California.
Okay, and did you ever, were you ever in private practice as a clinician?
I went into private practice 2 years after I graduated, starting with service contracting to skilled nursing and home health, and then progressed into an outpatient office.
Okay, and what started you, or what promoted you to get out of patient care, so to speak, and pursue your career in a different role than what most PTs do?
No, I really saw a need based on my own experience. I tried outsourcing to a physician billing company. It was a complete train wreck.
Yeah.
So I recruited the mother of a six-year-old I was treating, and that's how we got started in 1987. And in 1997, I sold my practice, took that money, invested it with some other money that we raised, and brought the billing company into a new company, and that's how we got started.
So starting with just the two of you.
Starting with just two of us. So in 1998, we had 10 clients in California.
Okay.
So today we have about 300 clients and at over 1,000 locations in 43 states.
And how, that's a while ago, so obviously it wasn't totally integrated system. So what, did they just send you paper claims, or how did that work in 1990s?
Oh, yeah. Technology-wise, that was the dark ages, right? Yeah. We got UPS packages with everybody's charge slips in them every week, and we put them in the system, and then we mailed out reports at the end of the month.
Yeah. And what started out as a billing and collections program is now considered more of a practice management platform, so to speak. So how does that evolve from just the being a billing and collections company to now what you do in a full service type
of thing? Well, so what we did actually, we were using one product. We moved to a product called IDX, which was really great for us as a billing service. It's a really solid platform, but it was not PT specific. And we wanted our clients to do their own data entry. So we actually built software that we bolted on to IDX so that our clients could send us claims, and then we bolted on a reporting module. Well, after 5 years of bolting stuff on, we said, well, let's just replace the guts of it and have our own system, which we did in 2006.
So how does a PT with, I would assume, not a real software or IT background, how do you do that? Do you just partner up with somebody, or you source that out, or how do you do that?
Well, I mean, we went out and hired smart people who hired smarter people who actually did the work.
Yeah, okay, okay. So I can imagine you've seen all kinds of billing practices from PTs, and some probably very good, some maybe a little scary. So is it streamlined now? Do you think most people are billing as they should, or do you think there's still a lot of variance in how people bill these days?
I think, so I would break it down this way. You know, there's the coding of what you do, diagnostic and treatment coding, and then there's the sending out the claims. I think people are doing a better job of coding than they were 10 years ago.
Okay.
But they don't pay attention to how their staff enters the claims. They end up with these high error rates. They have to go onto the clearinghouse site and fix claims. That can take a week. So there's a really still a lot of sloppiness in the system. And you know what they say about computers is garbage in, garbage out. And boy, that's really true in the bill collect business.
Yeah. So you said you kind of started your career, so to speak, in private practice. And I know that when you were on the APTA Board of Directors, that, you know, you had some issues with private practice at the time, and there were kind of some things that were going on. So what's changed in your clients over the years as far as providing services for private practices?
So, Steve, I think the biggest difference in private practice is that private practitioners in general have kind of joined the mainstream of other physical therapists.
Uh-huh.
I think for a long time we were confused that our business model made us different from other therapists, and I really think that that's not true at all. I think that private practice physical therapy, in a lot of ways, is almost the epitome of how physical therapy can be done, because it allows the personal lifetime relationship with the patient. And because of that, I think that practice owners have become broader in their view of how they fit into physical therapy. And in terms of APTA in general, I think private practice has always been the group that's carried the torch for government relations and for lobbying and for trying to move things forward on the outpatient side.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's solidified and moved forward, and I think the partnership is stronger than ever.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, going back to both of us have been around for a little while, you were on the board of directors of APTA when I was the private practice president. And when I came on, those two groups were a little at odds a lot of times with some issues. But now I think we would be safe to say that that has gotten back together very well. And I think that PPS and APTA are playing very well in the sandbox, let's say, together.
I think there's a much better appreciation to what both sides can bring to the table. And and as both sides focus on their skill set, we've done better together.
Yeah. How do you stay current ahead of the curve in this fast-changing IT world? I mean, I can only imagine that just when you think you have your system perfect, something new and exciting comes along. So how do you stay current with that?
Boy, a lot of reading and a lot of time on the internet, you know, just looking at what the thought leaders are doing in IT. And along with that, then, having to also look what the thought leaders are doing in healthcare IT, which is really a very different animal than IT in general.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And, you know, most PTs that I know don't like to be sold things. So how do you get your product or service out there to them without coming across as salesy and whatever? How do you do that?
Well, I think one of the things that makes our approach unique is that we have sales consultants who actually go out and meet with practice owners.
Uh-huh.
And we do a consultative sale approach where we take 6 months worth of their billing data, and we can break that down and benchmark them against other clients we have either in their area or against other data sources that we have. And when we present a proposal to a prospect, we're actually able to tell them how much better they can do, and we're usually able to actually guarantee that performance.
Okay. And, you know, what's the biggest game changer you've seen in EMRs in the last few years?
I think it's the transition away from the traditional soap note format to being able to incorporate some clinical practice guidance, compliance guidance in the software that doesn't get in the way of what you're trying to do with the patient. So it doesn't stop you and make you stop thinking clinically. It just cues you and gently moves you in the direction that you need to go. I think that's really been something that all the vendors have done a good job with.
And do you think that, you know, physical therapists seem to struggle with their documentation? I think we can universally say that. Is it kind of self-inflicted, or do you think it's more that that there's just so much required of them to do on their daily note through policies, regulations, government mandates type of thing? What do you think is the issue there?
I think it's really two things. The first one is there's certainly a much higher administrative burden in documentation than there's ever been before. Functional limitation reporting, PQRS, MIPS is around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely up the ante. But I think the other problem is that those of us who charted and did documentation in the paper world, we're not ever writing good notes.
Yeah.
So now we're forced to do that, and it takes more time to think about it. And I think that's just painful for people.
Yeah.
You know, the therapists who are coming out of school write a better note faster than someone who's been practicing for 15
So do you
years.
Think with the millennials coming out and being the biggest group of generation ever, even bigger than baby boomers, that the documentation issues will be, I'm sure they won't go away, but will they be easier for that group to deal with?
I think so, because they will not be struggling with the hardware and the devices and browsers and all that. It's going to be all second nature to them. So they're going to actually be able to focus on what they're writing more.
Yeah, that makes sense. As a leader in the PT profession, how do you get attention from the large healthcare IT systems and get them to consider integrating with BMS? I'm talking about the Epics and the Cerners and whatever. So do you see that as something that you're trying to do, and do you think there's a chance for that to happen?
That's a big part of our go-forward strategy. So, and the best way for us to make that happen is if we get a client who's got a contractual relation with a hospital who needs to have an integration, then we get that chance. So we've done integrations with GE Centricity, with Cerner, and NextGen, and we just look for those opportunities.
And it's kind of been known in the industry for a while that Epic was the one who didn't want to play that game, but it seems like maybe that's loosening up a little bit. So are they more open to that? Have you noticed that or not?
Yes, but I think, the regulations around EDI and meaningful use in the physician and hospital world has really facilitated that, because nobody has a system that's right for 100% of the planet.
Yeah. So what do you tell a new PT that's coming out of school and they're treating patients and that's why they went to physical therapy school, but then they feel like maybe I can have a bigger impact by doing something different than patient care? So you are an example of someone who kind of did that. So what would your advice be to those new professionals of how do you get to those leadership positions, or how do you get to positions within organizations that are other than treating patients?
Well, I think that, those first few years out of school are really important, and that people should take advantage of getting good at the craft and the science of physical therapy before they worry about doing that, because it's really that strength they bring as a therapist that in a related business or in a related service, whether it's software or whether it's exercise equipment or whether it's practice consulting or even malpractice insurance, that clinical background you bring is what solidifies the relationship with your future clients.
Yeah, that makes good sense. So in the near future, what needs to happen for physical therapists to be real players in this healthcare reform game or this healthcare of the future?
We have to embrace outcomes, and we have to own the dialogue around what are the appropriate outcomes for the various types of patient problems that we treat. Because if we don't own that and put those forward, other people are going to determine them for us. And we've already seen with functional limitation reporting and PQRS, we find ourselves doing measures that make no sense to us and don't appear to have any bearing on the quality of care at all.
So do you think it's going to come to, and I'm not going to put you on the spot here, but one outcome system or a few outcome systems, or it seems like now we have a whole bunch of different outcome systems that are out there and no one can seem to really agree on which one makes the most sense going forward?
Well, the real problem is we don't have enough science yet to show or be able to demonstrate which measures actually talk about the relate to value of care.
Right.
They show whether a patient's making functional improvement, but whether that is valuable or not, we haven't really found an effective way to measure that yet, right? So that's like the second generation of outcomes reporting.
Right. And now that APTA has launched this outcomes registry to try and get more information in so that it can not only help with research, but also could help with learning how to treat the patient better, learning what guidelines and what practice protocols really do make the difference and not just what we think they are.
I think that that's absolutely true. And the faster that everyone gets on board at reporting, the faster we'll be able to identify the data set we need to push forward on our outcomes.
Yeah. And as far as your clients, are most of them using outcomes? Are they interested in outcomes, or do they just see it as a burden? Do you have a feel for what your clients think of that?
I'd say actually most of our clients still look at it as a burden.
Yeah.
Right? I think that the more progressive clients we have, people are doing a better job at managing their clinical product, are using outcomes to improve how they treat patients, utilizing a best practice approach, right? And I think that those practices are moving ahead faster than practices who are resistant.
And does a company like yours have any influence, or do they look to you for leadership in that area? I mean, are they coming to you about outcomes, or do you feel like you're sending that message just one way?
No, the message is clearly going both ways. Okay. People are developing more of an understanding that they need to be interested in outcomes, but they don't really know how they need to do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have relationships with outcomes companies, two in particular, and, you know, I have my favorite of the two, but I won't get into that now. But people just need to sign up for it. It's a cost of doing business, and
right.
then they need to get better at looking at the data and making it meaningful to the staff therapists. That work.
And do you think that's a generational issue as well? Are the new professionals more used to or more prepared to just make outcomes part of their daily treatment, or is it everyone needs to move
I'd
in that direction?
I'd say the graduates from the last 8 to 10 years are less resistive because they were raised in the environment of evidence-based practice.
Yeah.
So, and when you have that kind of outlook, it makes sense to look at outcomes.
Right.
I think people need to stop looking at outcomes where they're projecting how many visits you should do as a negative thing.
Right.
It's really a positive thing. It should help you based on, you know, risk factor analysis to understand how fast your patient should get better.
And right.
Because it's not all art.
And if we get to the level of using outcomes like they should, shouldn't it in fact work like through the continuum of care, like after just a few treatments, if I'm behind on what, you know, the data shows that I should be at with this particular patient with this type of treatment, then I should adjust some way. I should be doing something different, or I should maybe refer that patient on to somebody else and use the outcomes through the treatment, not just as an end, did this patient do well or not?
No, it's really provides you with guideposts
yeah.
to allow you to assess your clinical effectiveness with the patient. And, you know, I mean, the way we did it coming up was you'd wake up in the morning and you'd go, wow, this patient's not getting better. I need to do something about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly.
Now you've got a way to be more discriminating about how you do that.
You've got data to help you with that. So what's the big vision, you know, people in your leadership positions, I'm sure, always thinking, you know, 3 to 5 to 10 years down the road. So what does this environment that you work in look like 5 to 7 to 10 years down the road?
5 to 7 to 10 years down the road, I see the end of fee schedules the way we know them.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're clearly going to get paid on an episodic basis with our patients.
Yeah.
And I think the change to ICD-10 is really critical for physical therapists to embrace, because they need to answer this one question for every patient. How does this patient with this one problem I see all the time, how is the rest of the things in that patient's life make that patient different than the
yeah.
rest of the people that have that problem? And because that's how you're going to get paid.
Yeah, so it's episodic care, and then also a case rates or case rate for a particular condition. You
right.
see that
but,
going in that
but
direction.
Being able to take complexities and comorbidities and to make that case to the payer so that you can get a higher reimbursement or higher payment when it's indicated, because this patient's more complicated than the average patient has this problem.
Yeah, so 5 to 7 to 10 years down the road, are we still going to be dealing with third-party payers, insurance companies, so to speak, or do you think it'll be more government and more employer-based at that point?
I think that there's going to be a huge shrinkage in the number of payers. There's going to be fewer,
yeah.
bigger payers. I would guess somewhere between 3 and 7.
Yeah, and is that a good thing for the profession, or is that a concern for the profession?
Well, you know, if you look at the past and you look at Medicare and the transition from Medicare contractors to the MACs,
yeah.
it's actually been good.
Yeah.
Because it's decreased the variability on the payer side. I can tell you the payers are way, way ahead of physical therapists when it comes to unwarranted variation in how we do our businesses.
Right. So what you're really saying is on our side of the fence, the provider side, we need to cut down that variation in the future.
Unwarranted variation in clinical approaches to patients is the biggest problem we have as a profession.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what clinical area you talk about.
Yeah, and do you think we're making strides in that area, or are we still in the infancy
well,
of that?
I think we could be, right? I think
yeah.
I think outcomes, the outcomes using risk-adjusted measures and outcomes is a big step to getting that done. But if
right.
you don't embrace that and look at your performance versus the prediction, you really can't be effective using that tool.
Yeah, makes sense. So what pearl of wisdom can you leave our viewers with as well, how it relates to leadership and moving our profession forward?
I think it is clearly don't confuse management with leadership.
Okay.
Management is for dealing with process. Mm-hmm. Leadership is for dealing with people. And you got to keep those two things straight. And, you know, a leader's got to have a clear vision. And if the leader doesn't have a clear vision, neither does the organization.
And as a profession, as the people that you see in our profession, do you think physical therapists are naturally good leaders, or do you think they're more managers, or where are we headed in that direction?
I think a lot of people who move up into APT national leadership have learned to be good managers because they've had to manage staff at a component level.
Right.
And that sometimes then moving into a leadership position nationally is challenge because all of a sudden all that's off your plate.
Right.
Your familiar toolbox is all gone, and now it's on you to help the profession be smart about the future, and that's challenging.
That is challenging, yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, John. I really appreciated the time today. I enjoyed talking with you, and I hope you enjoyed the program. And anything I didn't ask you that you've been dying to say?
I don't think so, but Steve, I really appreciate the opportunity to do this today.
Okay. Thanks so much, John.
You bet.
Yeah.